Welcome back to A Fresh Story, the podcast where we have conversations about brave decisions to start over again. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Olivia, and we're so glad you're here today. Okay, we are with Rima Zaman. She is an author, a speaker, and a screenwriter. She is the author of the critically acclaimed memoir, I Am Yours, and the forthcoming novel, Woman in Flight. Her essays have been published in Vogue, The Guardian, Salon, The Rumpus, and several others, to name a few. She is an Oregon Literary Arts Fellow, and you may recognize her from her viral interview with Cheryl Strayed on the Dear Sugars podcast, one of our faves. Born in Bangladesh and raised in Thailand, she now lives in L.A. with her Chihuahua daughter, Fia the Fierce, who you have sitting there in your lap right now. And we're so excited to have you here. We always say, like, you know, when you can put good energy into the world, you get the best people that come join your universe. And so we connected to you through one of our longtime people, Dara, who also was on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And we're so excited to have you here today.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jenny and Olivia. I'm so excited to be here. Fia's excited as well. She just hopped up on my lap when we started recording. I'm so grateful for Dara for so many things. And she actually found me through that Dear Sugars podcast interview. Wow. It came out in 2018, August. And then she listened to it in November. And she reached out to me immediately. And then we became besties, and I'm actually living with her. Fia and I are living with her for a few months as we get our fresh start in LA.
I love that.
We just moved here from Oregon.
I love that. And yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how the world works in that way. Like how you pick these people up on your journey and then they become the most important gems in your whole life, right?
Completely.
Yeah.
Completely. I mean, we've created work together. We've, you know, raised puppies together. You know, they've just been there for each other as we've gone through a lot of variations of fresh starts. And it's hard being a woman in this world. It's being a woman is a lonely endeavor. Being a single mom, as you know, Olivia, is a lonely endeavor. And Dara has found a village around her, and I'm proud to be a part of that village. We have to have each other. We have to lean on each other. Otherwise, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
I hesitate to mention this because Dara had her own episode of the podcast, but it's funny because we're part of Dara's extended village too. Like her father and our grandfather were really close friends. I believe they had season tickets to the Rangers next to each other. That's how they met.
Amazing.
And so we grew up with her like our cousin, but she's not our cousin, you know? And so you build these networks of people and you hold on to them. Like our grandfather passed away in 2003. And yet we're still like, we are going to hold on to Dara and Sam for the rest of our lives and for the rest of their lives. And you just, you collect these amazing people in your lives. And I'm just impressed that she reached out because I read that. I remember that Cheryl Strayed interview and I was like, wow, this person's amazing. It would have never occurred to me to be like, can I actually know her one day? So I'm so impressed by Dara for being like, hey, I'm going to shoot her an email.
Yeah, she actually just DM'd me on Twitter.
I love that.
Back when we were on Twitter before we all started staying away from it. It's a garbage heap. And she sent me like this long love letter via DM. And the next morning we talked on the phone. And then a few days later we met in person. It was magical. And and also I want to say I've had a crush on you two for years because of Fresh Start. And I've been like, oh my gosh, maybe one day we can collaborate on something. And then just naturally this happened.
So. Amazing. Well, good women find each other to support each other, right?
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're living in LA. You have Fia there in your lap. How are you doing today? How's the house doing today? The little house of women that you have going on there?
It's so much fun. I was saying this before we started recording. I love being a wife. Mm-hmm. And I think every woman needs a wife. And I love cooking. And so I've been feeding everyone incessantly, which thus far it's been going well. And then it's just nice. It's estrogen and puppies, which for me is heaven.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I mean, LA is so beautiful. Today's a bit chilly, but that's like once in a blue moon. And I've been wanting to move to LA for about 10 years now. And I kept on getting false starts. There you go. because initially, and we might as well launch into my fresh start.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, let's go.
My two ones. Yeah. People, the one people know most, the one people know well is, you know, from I Am Yours, where I was in a rather abusive relationship in my mid-20s. We got married for my green card. He held it over me like ransom and became more and more controlling and abusive. And it was really hard to, you know, get myself out of that relationship. And when I finally did, I had $60, my laptop, and my newfound voice. And I was so grateful for my freedom. And the silver lining of that relationship is that's when I found my voice by writing. Because previously I was a trained actress. I was trained to recite, to memorize and recite the scripts written largely by white men, by straight white men. And I'd gone to college for acting as well as women's studies because I thought I could be a feminist in service of art that was changing the planet and breaking down patriarchy. But I realized very quickly that really to have any sort of power over the narratives you're producing and putting out in the world, you need to be a writer or a director or a producer. It's very rare that as an actor, you can get to that level of power and agency. And then it's even more rare when you're a woman of color. Yeah. And back then in my 20s, you know, I'm 40 now. In my 20s, I was just this like bright-eyed, bushy-tailed little thing. And I was kept on getting auditioned and cast as like the supporting girlfriend role. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is not how I change the world. Yeah. And thankfully I discovered writing because I had to. And I think that's similar to your stories too. Like I mentioned, like, you know, half jokingly, like I love being a wife. I was raised to be a really good wife and a really good girlfriend and a really good mother. I know I'll be an amazing mother one day and I'm an amazing mother to Thea. And that's my conditioning. I'm very good at nurturing and taking care of people.
Yeah.
And so had I not been in a relationship that pushed me against a wall, figuratively and literally, where I had to dig deep and find my voice and pull it out and roar on my own behalf, I don't think I would have ever become a writer because I wouldn't be in a position where I would need to use my voice. And by being put in a place of danger, that was, it was catalyzed. So I'm grateful for that relationship because without it, I wouldn't have discovered my edge.
Yeah.
And my edge is another huge side of me that was living dormant for so long because of the conditioning.
Yeah.
You can't be nurturing and have an edge. Well, actually, you can.
Yeah.
And we are the types of women who are showing that's possible.
Yeah. And so much of it, too, is just like when you are pushed up against that place, you don't feel like your words are worthy of being in the world.
Exactly.
Right. Like who's going to, who cares? Right? Who's going to listen to me? And it's funny. I feel like you and I have, and Jenny too, have a similar trajectory of like our writing was a fresh start. Right. And in so many ways. And like my writing saved me. Also, my writing is what ended my marriage. And it's funny, Rima, because just the other day I jokingly said to my mom, I was like, you know, when we publish our book, maybe I'll thank my ex-husband in the acknowledgments because I wouldn't be anyway. The life I'm supposed to have is have not happened because of him. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I very much understand that, like, that both and, right, the grateful and also like the really happy it's over.
Totally. And ultimately, you know, we will meet characters in our lives that inspire certain things or introduce us to certain parts of ourselves, but ultimately it's our talent and our resilience that made that voice what it is today.
Yeah.
So he can get gratitude, but not credit.
Yeah.
There you go.
I always say too about my ex, I'm like, one day I'll thank him. Not any day soon, but one day I am thankful in the now, but I don't think that he can understand. I'm not comfortable communicating that quite yet. I think, you know, you mentioned something that was interesting to me, which is that I have moved to Scotland and I live here with my husband. And I wouldn't live here if it wasn't for him. I mean, I would love to, but I probably wouldn't be able to. And I think that this thing of visas and green cards, it does this warping to relationships because you want to stay here. You want to stay in the country because you're with that person and you don't want to leave them. And it creates this like I think in your situation, like I would imagine it created this sort of like desire and this need and this draw where it's like, yeah. I can't be away from you. So then you have to do things like get married, which maybe you wouldn't have done otherwise.
Completely.
Because it's like this, like, they're going to take me away from you kind of feeling. And I think it's unhealthy in a way.
Right. Mine was a little different, but also very similar yeah. elements and dynamics. And I really appreciate you making that point where it brings an element of urgency and desperation
urgency.
That ultimately
yeah.
Relationships should be allowed to bloom and discover itself
right.
without
right.
any conditions or,
right.
you know, pressures. It's the same as like if you were to get accidentally pregnant and then suddenly it's like, even
right.
if that's what you want down the road,
right.
it brings a whole new dynamic into the picture of,
right.
again, urgency. With me, it was, I was born in Bangladesh, raised in Thailand and educated there. And when I graduated from high school, I moved to the States for college on a student visa. And then upon graduation, my agents would sponsor, I had my OPT, which is that 1 year visa you college students have after graduating. And then my agents sponsored my visas every year. 1 year, my modeling agency would do it. Another year, my acting agency, and they would flip flop that way. So that's what my life was like. You know, when I met the man who then became my husband, I was 25 and he was 11. He's 11 years older. He was 36. And now being older than he was, I can see
yeah.
what he was doing.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't even know how conscious he was of it. I think
mm-hmm.
that's the thing. So many men are harmed by patriarchy because they are raised mm-hmm. to be so possessive, it borderlines controlling and abusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that protective, that becomes possessive, that becomes controlling, that becomes abusive.
Yeah.
It's like a very, very shady gray area. Anyways, so I was about 4 months into dating, I was about to renew my visa and the fees were like, you know, $2,000 for my lawyer or $3,000 and another $1,000 for all the paperwork. And he was like, hey, babe, like, you know, I want to marry you one day. What if we get married now, you know, just for on paper? And then that way, like, we get to save money. You can put that into this house that I'm renovating for us and our kids one day. And I just thought that was the most romantic thing.
Yeah,
right.
And so we went through that. And then suddenly I was like, oh, I have essentially given up my power to live and work in the United States. And all that power lives in this one man's hands.
Yeah.
And as long as he's happy and he loves me, I'm fine. But if he were to have a bad day, I'm in danger. And when you're first in love with someone, you don't even realize that's something you need to be conscious of. But then the more I got to know him, the more I realized how mercurial he was and how,
mm-hmm.
you know, how my status in his day was based on his moods.
Yeah.
And so then on his good days, I would be his wife for realsies. And on his bad days, he would call me his wife for greensies, as in like it was fake, that he didn't really love me, that it was just a contract. And it was, it completely warped everything, you know. I think
yeah.
he started feeling a lot of pressure. I started feeling like I have to, and then that, you know, he became more and more controlling. I was working on eggshells. It was just a nightmare.
Yeah.
It was, you know, but it, like I said, like, and it ended up, I started to kind of write down what was happening to me every day because he would gaslight a lot and say, oh, I never said that. I never yelled at you about that. So I initially started writing as a form of documentation where anything to happen to me, where I need to, you know, take us to court. I had also done research to see how can you transfer sponsorship from a spouse onto yourself for the green card. And you can only do that if you show evidence of abuse. And back then, especially, this was over 10 years ago. This was 12, 13 years ago. The only type of abuse that really mattered was physical. So I was like, well, he's not hitting me. But I started writing down just our daily affairs. And in that process, I also started to just ask myself the question, how did I, an educated, card-carrying feminist, a women's studies major, end up in this relationship? And how did he, who was once born an innocent young boy, how did he become this man? And while I was doing that work, I learned a few things. One, that I had some morsel of talent to write. And then two, the words on the page were giving me so much clarity, and that clarity led to confidence. And that mm-hmm. confidence led me to say words to him that I'd previously never said before, one of which was no.
Yep.
No, you can't speak to me that way. No, you can't behave that way. And he started looking at me and saying, you know, you're different than the girl I married. I said, yeah, I'm growing, God forbid. And I realized that the only way an abuser will really let you go is if they become tired of you. An abuser needs a victim. And so I stopped, and I knew that if I tried to get away from him, I was worried about what he would do in terms of my green card and would, you know, whether he was going to accuse me of fraud, all of that, right. and then try to get me deported. He had that kind of temper. And so I realized I just have to get him to be tired of me. And so I withdrew all my emotional fodder. You know, abusers, they want your fear, your sorrow, and they want you to engage in their rage. So anytime he would try to make me cry, I wouldn't give him my tears, I wouldn't give him my sorrow, and I wouldn't engage in his arguments.
That's where the acting came into play.
Yeah.
And I'm a very disciplined person, so I can be emotionally and physically very disciplined. And I just became stone-faced, and he grew tired of me and kicked me out. And that's when I had $60 and a laptop and my newfound freedom.
Wow.
Thank you.
So you are a very talented writer. And you didn't necessarily know that, but did you always sort of have where did that come from? Do you think that always sort of lived inside you, maybe in your mind? Were you sort of writing these sort of stories? Like, do you have a thoughtful sort of romantic way of, you know, your
narrating.
personal, your inner narration?
Definitely. And I had all throughout my childhood, but I'd never been affirmed for it. I remember my high school teachers saying that I write with too much emotion or too much of my personality in my book reports or things that are like persuasive essays. I was always getting reprimanded and telling and being told to rein it in, which is ironic because after my book was published and my essays and everything kind of took off and I was doing speaking engagements, blah, blah, blah. They all would email me.
That's funny.
Over Facebook and be like, we're so proud of you. I've always known. And I'm like,
did you? Really?
Okay.
Fine, sure. Thanks. It's just, but I was always in theater, you know, and another part of the story that is a big element, I was severely anorexic from the time I was 15 to 30. And I also, at the age of 15, I also started to do theater, and I had so much validation by being on stage. People loved me on stage. People thought I was very sparkly and shiny and pretty to look at and charismatic. And for me, instead of pursuing my intelligence, I just pursued that adoration and applause, which is the path to hell, like addiction and hell, which is what I was in for my 20s. And that was part of, after I left that relationship, I was like, who do I really want to be as I enter my 30s and then live out the rest of my life? If I remain anorexic, I'm also going to keep on repeating the same abusive, toxic relationships, because I was very comfortable with being in relationships that starved me because that had become my condition. I had conditioned that inside of me, you know, and of course that also came from elements in my childhood. And so when I sat down to write my memoir, I also said, I'm going to start feeding myself emotionally and physically. And again, because I had, you know, really started to contemplate, oh, I may have enough talent to make it as a writer professionally.
Yeah.
My priority shifted where I no longer saw my body as just a vehicle or something to control and manipulate. I saw my body as a vessel for my brain, and I saw my brain as being something worthwhile finally. And so I was like, I'm going to feed my brain so I can write this book.
Yeah.
And it completely, like overnight, my addiction just started to lose its power over me.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's discipline too, though. Like, it's interesting. It seems like once you say like, well, I'm not going to give him my emotions anymore, that you're, you know, the discipline there and the sort of, it's like once you reframe it and you're like, well, that's my goal now. Where does that come from?
My mom says I've been like that since I was a kid.
So interesting, yeah.
But thank you. I've always had, it's like kind of scary. So you have to make sure I'm attached to the correct idea. Because if I'm attached to the wrong idea, I will do myself so much harm.
If we suggest like a jewelry heist or something, it would be a really bad idea.
Because we'll get it done. Like,
that's the and you would accomplish it.
I mean, bad or good? I mean, we need money to overthrow the patriarchy. Yeah. I feel like a jewelry heist would be a very easy. I mean, Ocean's 8 is
the
one
jewel
of my,
we're talking about.
Yeah. Ocean's 8 is one of my favorite movies. So.
Who are we taking the jewels from?
Exactly.
You know?
Do they really need it? Come on.
Do they need it? Could it serve a bigger purpose?
Yes.
Right. You know? All important questions. So. All maybe we cut questions. This part out and we keep having conversations. I don't know.
Exactly.
I mean, so much of it, so much of it is the way we perceive ourselves through the language we use for ourselves, right? And so I think it's so interesting that you decided to kind of, it all started as a documentation, right? And kind of like as a journal on your journey to back to
that's
yourself.
That's brilliant.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, and then you kind of like, and I feel like the memoir is like this destination, right, that you finally got to after kind of spending so much time figuring out who you were and how to use your language, because our language is what builds our belief system, right? So if we can shift the language, then our belief system shifts, and it can happen overnight. And I think that's the part of healing. Like you said, people don't always believe, but it really can. And I've worked with people, and I mean, even with my own journey, it's like you can wake up in the morning and be like, oh, I'm actually not that person that I thought I was. It's all a story. So what happened? Take us through, like, you had the $60, you had your laptop. What happened next?
Thankfully, my ex, he had a condo in Chelsea that he had been renting out to a tenant, and the tenant left. And I moved in, and technically the spouse who kicks out the other spouse has to provide free housing for them. But, and so I didn't have, technically I wouldn't have had to give him rent, but I also knew if I tried to not, that would be the seventh layer of hell. So I gave him rent happily for my freedom and for the peace and quiet. And it was the first time ever that I'd lived alone. And, you know, for women, I think it's really important to have, for anybody, but it's really important to have a chunk of time where you're living on your own, where you don't have someone else's tastes and voice and opinion to take into consideration, where you can just tune into the sound of your own voice and the and who you truly are. And for me, those 2 years were phenomenal for that. They were fundamental in my making as a person and as well as a writer. And so I continued to go to my babysitting jobs, I continued to go to auditions, but I kept on writing just for myself. And I had a ton of different like essays that I was writing, and I didn't show them to anyone until one of my essays, it was about anorexia and what it truly is about and how I think it, you know, for most of us who have suffered from it, it's a trauma response, you know, it's a response to suppress trauma that hasn't been healed. And it manifests in that kind of behavior. And so I put that, I published that essay on Facebook when you could do those long notes. And everyone went wild for it. And they were like, oh, who wrote this? It's so intelligent. And I was like, it's me.
Thank you.
Come back. And it's like coming back to what you said, Olivia, like so much of it is like our perception of ourselves. And then also what other people know us and identify us as.
Yeah.
And my mom, she said, you know, send this to Oprah. It's really good. And I was like, well, I don't have Oprah on like speech. But
such a mom comment.
I know, it's so great. And I was like, but I, that does mean, and she said, I think you have a book inside of you. And my baby sister, and I was still in New York at this time. So my baby sister was going to graduate from high school, and they all live in Oregon. My parent, my mom, stepdad, and my sister. And so she was going to graduate, and I was already scheduled to go and, you know, see her graduation. And my mom said, stay on for a few months and keep writing and see what happens. And so I did that. And I ended up staying for 10 years. I went to Oregon on a one-way ticket from New York, and I started writing. And that's when I was thinking, you know, I'm going to move to LA, you know, so I can still continue acting as well as writing, but it's really expensive here. And I knew as a, if I was trying to get a writing career off the ground, I should do it in a city that's you know, less expensive, but also mm-hmm. with the support of my family around me. So right. I lived with my parents for a year, and then I started working at Whole Foods and KinderCare. And then I saved up, got my own apartment, got my own agent, started publishing my essays. Then my book was bought and then published in 2019. So I moved from New York in 2013. It took a while for the book to get picked up and then published in 2019. And that's when things started to all kind of coalesce and not explode, but my mom calls it a seamless explosion, like very gentle, elegant explosion.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I understand that.
Yeah, and things started to just build. And then again, I was going to move to LA in 2020, but then the pandemic hit. And I'm grateful I didn't go, because that's when I met and adopted Fia. Mm-hmm. And she is the center of my universe. Mm-hmm. And then in December 2020 is when I met my ex-partner, who I was with for the last couple of years. And then the moment he and I broke up last June 2023 is when I was like, all right, Fia, we are going to LA. So I've had another fresh start. Mm-hmm. I'm moving to another new city. But I will say the difference between all the other cities and this one is LA has always felt like home. Even when I would visit mm-hmm. for work or for, you know, family weddings or anything, I've always felt at home here. And which is why I've been trying to get here for the last 10 years. And the moment we landed, Fia and I just have been thriving. And so in the course of this last year, starting in December 2022, I started writing another book between I'm Yours and Woman in Flight. I wrote another book. I wrote a dystopian novel called Paramita, a dystopian matriarchy during the pandemic, as one does. Mm-hmm. But I started writing a third book called Woman in Flight when I could feel that my, you know, recent relationship, I could feel that there was a hawk circling the soon to be dead body of that relationship. Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to describe that. Understood.
And I've realized like a huge part of my process of leaving a man, I have to write about it. And the writing gives me the courage. The writing gives me the clarity and then the confidence and then the courage to leave him. Mm. Without him, it's really hard. I love really deeply. I get attached and I'm incredibly loyal. Yeah. It will take a lot for me to leave someone long after, you know, it's long after the signs have been saying, Rima, leave, for about like 2 years. And the only way to get me out of it is to sit me down and tell me, you have to write about this. And it's like, I have to rewire my brain by writing about us as characters. Yeah. And because this was a novel, I fictionalized a lot of the relationship, but there's a lot of it in there. And by looking at myself as though I was a character, I started to advocate for that woman named Mia. My protagonist is named Mia. So it's Rima, Fia, Mia. Like, obviously, there's a lot of connection there. So Mia, as I was rooting for her to leave her partner, I started to gain the courage to do that, to do the same.
Yeah, I love that.
So I think, and this book, it has a lot to do with similar themes as I Am Yours, but, you know, 10 years later, when I have 10 more years of experience and knowledge, it looks at the role of money in heterosexual relationships. It looks at the role, it looks at the role of emotional labor that we devote to relationships, and how sometimes it can become like the shackles that hold us hostage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we feel so responsible for the relationship and the people in it. It looks at therapy abuse, which is when one person uses therapy jargon to gaslight and control the other person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It looks at how easy it is, at least for me, to lose my voice in a relationship, to surrender myself and abandon myself.
Yeah.
And then it looks at how to regain yourself, how to reclaim those pieces.
So when is the book coming out?
So right now it's actually on submission. Well, I fired my agent a couple of weeks ago. I realized that Wonderful, wonderful person. But yeah. I realized that I was doing the same thing in that relationship that I have with many male partners, which is I was doing the work of two people, or I was making up for, I was doing much more work that was not mine to do. And the publishing industry is not all agents are created equally, unfortunately. And unless you're represented by major agents, it's really hard to get read by the publishers and editors you want to get read and acquired by. And we had gone out on submission for Paramita and got no bites, even though that's a really strong book. We went out on submission in January with Woman in Flight, and we weren't even getting read by the editors we had sent it to. And I realized, well, it may be because that agency I was with did not have the power to get those editors to even open up those emails. Because it the agencies that do have the power to do so are CAA, UTA, William Morris, the Book Group, because they, and I'm happy, I love talking about the behind the scenes. I don't like gatekeeping. The reason why those clients get read is because those agencies also represent people like Prince Harry and Obama and Biden. And their memoirs are the ones that sell millions of copies and make the rest of our advances possible. Their memoirs, their books keep the industry alive. So of course, if you're an agent who, you know, represents Biden and also represents little old me, you know, those editors are going to prioritize reading my manuscript because they want to keep those agents happy. It's just the nature of the business. So I felt like I was really stepping up for my inner child, because there were a lot of things, and people who have read I Am Yours know this, there were a lot of things in my childhood where I wish my parents had been more vocal about protecting me against outside forces. And I didn't have, I have extremely loving parents, but I don't have the kind of parents that would like storm into a high school or a middle school and say like, my kid deserves better. So I felt like I was doing that for myself when had the audacity to break up with my agent. And I was like, because I deserve better, you know, my kid deserves better. My books are my babies. And it's interesting how sometimes we need like the one degree away from us for us to be like, I'm going to stand up for you. I was standing up for my book and standing up for myself. But so that's where we are with it. I love the book very much. I believe in it. And I think it's just going to, it's going to be a matter of getting it into the right hands and being read by the right people.
We were just talking to our friend L'Oreal Thompson Payton, who wrote Stop Waiting for Perfect. And we talked a lot with her about how she fired multiple agents. And she was like, she's like, I literally, nobody talks about it, right? She's like, I had to Google and like YouTube, like how to fire your agent, because people just don't, it's part of the industry that nobody talks about. It took her years to get her book made. So I appreciate that, you know, we're not gatekeepers either. We're all about obviously talking about everything. And so, you know, I think it's important to talk about this stuff, because I think there's a lot of people that will be like, I want to write a book and I want to get it published. And you're like, but it's a really bureaucratic system that actually has nothing to do with your writing, right? So it's tricky.
I think you know, until just recently, like people that wrote books seemed like they were in a, you know, tower someplace else, like literally an ivory tower. And this idea, I mean, like I said, the idea that Dara would go to Twitter and be like, I'm gonna look up Rima, and I, like, to me at that time I was like, she must be, like, you were in a different stratosphere for me. So I think it wasn't until social media sort of democratized the experience where we can be like, well, now we, Olivia and I, know, while we're writing our book proposal, 10 published authors. We didn't know any published authors before. We didn't have anybody that could talk to us about the experience of having a literary agent, nonetheless firing a literary agent. So it's like being able to have these conversations, and I, you know, being able to be in conversation with other authors, it's a an amazing tool, an amazing utility for social media that it's been able to do this for everybody.
For sure. And it's being read right now by a magical agent at CAA. And again, I met her through another friend, another author friend whom I met on Instagram. And back to your point, like social media has democratized the playing field for everyone, you know, and it's taken away the illusion that there are some of us who are more worthy of certain things and of access, whether it's to each other or to agents or publishers. I love that about social media. I mean, I know there are many pitfalls of it, but for me, it's been a wonderful tool for community, especially my community of women.
Well, I mean,
you
go ahead, because I'm probably going to say the same thing you're going to say, but I want to hear what you have to say first.
I just said that I make my entire living because of social media. You know, I teach writing classes every Tuesday night and Thursday night, and then I coach one-on-one coaching. And all of my students are women who have read an article or listened to Dear Sugars or read I Am Yours, and they found me over social media.
Yeah.
And they kept on persisting and asking about teaching and coaching until I said, you know what, I should just offer this.
Yeah.
And that's what I do full time.
I love that. That's amazing. I was going to say, you're like, so when we first connected and I was looking at you on social media, I'm going to say you're like the Forrest Gump of authors. You know everybody. Like, you literally know everybody. Like, and I just love that about you. Like, I'll go through your Instagram and it's like, oh, here she is with this person and here she is with this person. And, you know, I just think it's so cool. And when I was thinking about our conversation today, so much of what we lack, I think, in the world is a model for women who are really, really successful, right? Like, it's like you see, like, Reese Witherspoon is over there in that tower, right? You can't access Reese Witherspoon to ask her how she became Reese Witherspoon, right? No. And so I love that, like, people like you, who I love that you said that about your like, quiet, what did you say, the gentle explosion or, like, the quiet explosion?
Seamless explosion.
Because you are up there with, I mean, you are always like speaking and doing and all of these big things. And so we look at you as such a role model of like someone who did it. Like, you are a real human who had a real life shit happen. You worked at the kitty care, you were a nanny, all these things, right? And it's like to say, like, no, right now, you know, whatever it is, anybody listening to this, you know, you might be in, you know, a situation that you are trying to be a writer, but you have kids and you can't get out of the house, or, you know, you're in a job you hate or whatever. And to see people like you who really did do it, I think is magnificent to just put that into the world, because we don't have access to those people to say, like, how did you become Chip and Joanna Gaines? Or were they ever just, did they like come out of the ocean as Chip and Joanna Gaines, right? It's like, where did these people come from? So to see the progress, your progress has just been like beautiful. You know, I appreciate your consistency to honesty and your vulnerability and, you know, lifting women up as you go on your journey. Cause not all women do that.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much. I mean, my entire life revolves around estrogen and puppies. Like, I am so devoted to the cause of lifting women up, making sure we have access to the resources we need, because I truly believe, like, I mean, literally both my parents were born in villages in Bangladesh, not even the main city, Dhaka. I was born in the main city, Dhaka, in our capital. And were it not for their tireless fight to get us access to education, I would not be here. I would not even be speaking English, you know, the way I speak it, all of it. It's all about access.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm living proof of that. You know, I was supposed to have an arranged marriage like my parents. And until at age 9, I told my father I refuse. Mm. And I could have been on a completely different trajectory.
Right.
I'm obsessed with parallel lives, by the way, probably because of this, because I'm so cognizant of the parallel lives I could be living.
Yes.
Yep. And the book I'm working on now, it's called What We Could Have Been. And it's about, we look at a woman's two parallel lives. In one, she has an affair, and the other, she chooses to work on her marriage. But anyway, so all to say, like, thank you so much, Olivia. Thank you, Jenny, for affirming those things in me, because I work so hard to make sure that I am accessible. If anybody DMs me on Instagram, I will, even if I don't know them, I will get back to them. I will, you know, connect them with anybody I can connect them. And then I also have a free 1-hour consult that's just available to anyone. And I essentially started it because for people who are interested in coaching or taking my classes. And mm-hmm. then I realized people were using it just to ask questions that, you know, like, how mm-hmm. do I write a query letter? And I realized, yeah, I could charge them for this kind of coaching, but you know what? Why? Like,
yeah.
And I loved just having that, creating those little opportunities for people to, yeah, feel less scared, less intimidated, less overwhelmed. I think that's the whole part of this. That's the whole purpose of this podcast, to make life a little less overwhelming for each other.
We try.
Yeah, you know, Olivia and I talk a lot about how there are certain things that are, there's like a line between the things that you offer for free and the things that you can't offer for free, you know, energetically but how there are things that like we don't gatekeep because behind a paywall, we don't paywall, I should say, because like that is part, there's certain community that you just want to build. And it is important to know the determination of that. Mm-hmm. And then also like, you know, I always say like to hold the proper boundaries and be like, actually, I do need to charge for that because that does take a certain thing out of me energetically. Totally. Because we don't serve people when we're just like giving everything over. That is that wife energy that we're trying not to do anymore, all of us, of exhausting ourselves by serving mm-hmm. others, but protecting ourselves too, because we show up for our people best when we are rested and when we mm-hmm. are healthy and when we are nourished. And I think that you do such a great job of walking that line. I know it's a constant probably exercise, as it is for me, of being like, how much do I give, how much do I protect, but you know, knowing those people that you can invest in and knowing who you can, you know, act as a wife for 4 months, and that they're going to mm-hmm. still love you and protect you and take care of you and put into you as well, and celebrating those people and nourishing them, quite literally.
Completely. It's beautifully said. Thank you.
That means a lot.
So, Rima, if somebody is going through a fresh start, what would be some mm-hmm. wise words that you could impart to them?
Read the books or listen to the interviews of women who've also gone through that. You know, we talked about Woman in Flight. It's about a 39-year-old woman who is a librarian, who's always wanted to be a novelist but doesn't believe in her voice. A 39-year-old woman who leaves her partner after she inherits $4 million to travel the world and become a single mom by choice. Mm. And I will always write the same kind of love story, the love mm-hmm. story of a woman falling in love with herself after giving her love and investing her love in everybody else.
Yeah.
And the thing is, there's a lot of those books out there, whether you're going to read my book or listen to the Fresh Start podcast, like find those stories of women who have gone through that. Who have emancipated themselves and then built themselves back piece by piece. That will give you the courage to do the same.
And your beautiful memoir as well.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. I love that.
We'll obviously link in the show notes. And last question, most hardest question of all, what was the last thing that you ate and truly loved?
I make sure to love everything that I eat, or I eat things that I love, especially after, you know, going through 15 years of, you know, having such a terrible relationship with food. Last night, what did I make? I made sweet potato boats with umami black beans and a tahini dressing and avocado.
Oh, that
and
sounds
I made,
amazing.
Grilled broccolini and beets. I cook a lot. And then this morning I had my oatmeal bowl as usual, and Fia had her pork breakfast. She is the one non-vegan in our family. I am vegan and she definitely is not. food. I love that question. I mean, for me, it's like a profound question because of my history. Yeah. I make sure to eat only things I love.
I love
it's
that.
It's important.
Yeah,
I had that realization the other day. I was like, I never have to eat another meal that I don't adore. Like, as an adult, it's
mind-blowing.
It's so satisfying to realize.
You're like, oh, it
I think I'm
have
like, food. I'll get up in the middle of the meal and I'll be like, okay, wait, this isn't working. We need to fix it because I need to love this meal.
I love that you're going through that. I went through the same with, I realized the other day I never had to see snow unless I want to. And I wept because I was so happy. Mm-hmm. It's like, the things we kind of settle for It's like, oh, these are the conditions of my life. And then you realize that's a sad, yes.
Yeah,
sad
I love
sentence,
that.
You know?
Ooh, yeah. I love that. That's a you great way to end this episode, mm-hmm. The conditions of your life. I feel like that's maybe in the next book. Well, where can people find you? How can they read your things? How can they follow you?
Thank you. All the
stuff.
I'm most active on Instagram. I don't really do anything else anywhere else. So please just reach out on Instagram. I'm really easy to find because Rima Zaman is a pretty unique name. Mm-hmm. And I'm easy to access. That's actually more important. I'm easy to access because I will always respond to your emails, DMs, everything. My email is rima@rimazaman.com. If you have any burning questions about writing, please email me. I will guide you in the right. If I can't coach you on it, I will guide you towards the correct resources. Amazon has I Am Yours. There's a lot of libraries that carry it. It was published 5 years ago, so it may not be in your local indie, but you can always request that they order it. And then Woman in Flight. Yeah, let's keep on putting energy into the world that it gets picked up by a fabulous agent and then a fabulous publisher.
It will.
It will happen.
No doubt.
It will happen.
No doubt. It just has to find its like soul agent and its soul publisher. It will.
Exactly. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time and being here and just for being the person that you are and the model and just for using your voice for good and changing the dynamics of this world with your words because they're so beautiful and so powerful like you. So we appreciate you and feel free to come back anytime to the podcast.
I would love that. I would love that so much. And I'm starting my own podcast called Women in Words with Rima Zaman. So I would love for you both to be there, please. Oh,
anytime. We'll be there. We'll promote the hell out of it. Amazing. Thank you so much, Rima.
Thank you for all that you do, both of you, Jenny, Olivia. You lift the world with your voices and your heart.
We appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's story. We're always here, and we're so proud of you.
A Fresh Story is produced by Fresh Starts Registry, the first and only platform for everything you need to begin again. You can read the show notes and learn more about today's episode at afreshstory.com.